Hello and welcome back to another episode of Press Pause, where I have the absolute pleasure of interviewing creatives in the TTRPG space about what they do and why they do it. Today, to chat with me is Rara, a game designer, a podcast host, a sound designer extraordinaire. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
It's great to be back in the studio. I haven't been here since I fingered the void.
Yeah, you know what? The one thing we're never going to live down is the fingering the void. And sometimes you just have to accept that and let it live.
There was a point I could see on your face, at, like, in that first couple scenes, like us breaking into the building, where you were like, this might be a little more goofy than I expected. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, you accept what your players are giving you and you move on.
I have an Apocalypse World series coming out that's kind of like that. Within 10 minutes, yeah. I was like, oh.
But we like to start out here with the kind of basics or the beginnings of your story in the TTRPG space, which is, how did this begin? How did you happen upon tabletop role-playing games?
Interesting. Well, I haven't been in the space very long. Like, this December will be 2 years for the podcast, and September will be 2 years for me. So still a baby.
I think more of like, were you playing games outside of mm-hmm. like making game, like creating content?
I was running D&D at okay. home outside of yeah. the space. My spouse Creature and I ran like a queer meetup locally where queer mm-hmm. players could come meet at a coffee shop and find safe tables because we live in like a rather conservative area. But before that, we were running campaigns kind of during the end couple years of COVID for a specific group of friends that were like couples. So it was kind of a safer, it was the same people every week type of deal. And I GM'd that for a few years, and then Feral did, but none of those were like hard as a dungeon. They were big fantasy campaigns. I hadn't done it for very long. COVID was ending before I started looking at TTRPGs. Yeah, so I unfortunately missed how great it would have been during that time to have community. but we were very focused on like local mutual aid. Like, we did diaper drives and food drives, and we delivered groceries to people's houses and things of that sort. After the main players we played with moved away, we focused a little more on that group where we would have people over and teach them how to play D&D. Like, I had a 3-part campaign I would run for new people, and each one was designed for them to like figure out stats, then moves, then like an epic ending. And so we did a lot of that, and then that kind of petered out because we had trained everyone. We kind of handed it off to like some younger queers, basically. And I was like, you know, I think people play games online. Like, I've seen it mentioned because I had a Twitter account at the time, but it was for posting like terrains and stuff that I had carved and those sorts of things. But Julie from Roll D5 was the only streamer that I had on my feed. At the time, I thought they were Latin. They're not. That's another embarrassing story that we won't get into. But they were just the one person I knew that wasn't Critical Role or Dimension 20. So when I decided to try it out, I went and lurked Julie's profile and found, okay, Roll D5, that looks like a group. I think this is a group. And I just kind of followed all these breadcrumbs, applied to 12 things because I figured no one would say yes because I'm new, got into 10 of them. And I was like, well, how do I do this? So had mic issues the first session, but nothing too bad after that, and kind of jumped in very quickly.
I feel like if it makes you feel any better, you had made a comment once for like, when you were on our Candela Obscura, we made you audition for it. but if it makes you feel any better, that's because like, I also at that time did not really know anything about streaming. I was like, we had already put out like a couple seasons of our podcast, but it was like through friends. It wasn't like through the community. Mm-hmm. And so when you applied and we saw your audition, it was like, oh yeah, this person has to be on the show. But it was like, also then when you said that, I was like, I know, I feel so weird now knowing who you are to have been like,
it's two times I've had to audition. Once was for you, and once was for the Tabletop Tailspinners Network. Who now I have GM'd a series for that's not even out yet. But no, it was fun, and it was weird because I remember Farrell's being out of town, and it was maybe really warm or something, and I wanted to wear a coat in my video, and I wanted to use some accents, but I only had like two, and I felt just way over my head. Like, I'm not going to get anything I have to audition for.
Definitely you will, but you don't have to audition anymore because everyone knows who you are and like the types of stories you are willing to bring to a table.
I don't even apply anymore.
I know.
I tell people
you're like, I don't have time for this.
I really like podcasting more than streaming, though. All those months of one shots, because I did like 60 the first year, I met so many players that I pulled like my favorites from, and that became the first wave of Thyad for the most part. Like the fairies, I had never met Kelly. Kelly was like a big reach grab for me because they applied. And I was like, they have a couple thousand followers and they play games. People know who they are. And Mika was like a gracious yes, because Mika's very busy. Zoe had only done one TTRPG thing ever before. And it was an Orbital Blues one shot I met them in. And Farrell had only done Thyad season one. So Kelly and Mika were the intimidating two, and now they're like some of my dearest friends, in the world. So it's a great space for that, I have to say.
I think that like you had jumped into, you were talking about like playing D&D, you kind of jumped into DMing or GMing like right away. And I think then in your journey into like making a podcast, you have obviously been opened up to a lot of different games than just D&D. Do you find that there are like specific types of games that you kind of lean towards, like whether there's like a mechanic in a game that you like, or I'm assuming more narrative focused games are kind of up your alley?
Most of the time. Like Powered by the Apocalypse is kind of a perfect system for me because it just gives me a lot of freedom narratively, especially with combat. Because I don't run much combat. Before our current season, we had one round of combat in like a year and a half. But this season we had a whole episode that was nothing but a round of combat, and soundscaping it and my style took so long.
I can't even imagine.
But we haven't ran D&D since that first season. And out of those were half hour episodes, the first season. And I think D&D was half of them. Because we also had Old Gods of Appalachia and Kids on Bikes and the rabbit one I made up for the first couple episodes. So D&D was maybe 6 of the 16 episodes of that first season. And I've swore I won't run it again until the Adventure Time module comes out.
Oh, I hear you. I do think that I'll have to step back into D&D when that comes out, because I do love Adventure Time.
My spouse creature has a full sleeve, so it's kind of like even the language of our home. We say things in Adventure Time language quite a bit.
I guess before you got into tabletop role-playing games, because that was such... it's relatively new. And I got into it in the time when it was becoming like a modem for storytelling. So before you kind of got into this, I'm assuming you were a storyteller because you tell so great stories now that you had to have been doing that forever. What was your experience with storytelling before tabletop?
Let's go back to fourth grade, where there's that boy with the yellow plastic briefcase that says private poems on it.
Okay.
And is trying to trick everyone into wanting to hear his poems while also being like, they're not for you. That's me. English teachers asked for 3 pages. I'd turn in 12. They wouldn't read them. That was always kind of me. Once I hit like 15, 16, and zine culture was pretty big because I'm a little older than some. And I was already in the alt, like punk rock, screamo-ish era of that. I made poetry pamphlets and poetry zines, and I wouldn't pass them out on street corners, and started participating in open mics. So I won like best open mic for our county and ended up accidentally being in a hip hop band. Because a friend of mine was like, why don't we record your spoken word and I'll just make the music? And I was like, that sounds awesome. And it turned into a bad hip hop band that then later was a better hip hop band. And then its third wave actually like played on some college radios. But I was always the writer kid who hung out with a lot of musicians or hung out with a lot of photographers for some reason at the time. Maybe because like American Beauty came out or something and just everyone went to photography school. But then later on, it was still open mics, but I also like told fairy tales on stages for things. I participated in just a lot of that type of activity. And then if you mix it with our mutual aid, where it's like whether we're leading like Bernie Sanders door knockers or mutual aid diaper drives, organizing large groups of people isn't a very difficult thing for me either. So when they both came together in TTRPGs, Farrell kept being like, I don't think you realize how nice of a fit this is going to be. Like all these different things you've done are going to line up really good. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I guess. And then tricked her into starting a podcast.
You have all the right words to say and use at this point.
It was, she did not know we were starting a podcast when we recorded the first episode of season one. It was just us playing around so I could mess with sound design.
When it comes to storytelling, whether it's in, you know, poetry, spoken word that you've done or now in TTRPGs, do you feel like there are themes that you like to see play out in games over and over again? Mm-hmm. Or
I love ritual. If you listen to every season, you will find probably about a dozen things, if not even exact phrasings, that move from every season. Like in the fairy season, Farrell said this random line just out of nowhere in an episode with Abby that was like, it doesn't seem far from here, but sometimes nothing feels too far from here. That has shown up in every episode since, at least once.
Okay.
So I love repeated themes that make the whole show feel kind of cohesive, even in different mm-hmm. worlds. But my major themes are usually loss and hope. I would say a romance would be great, but I haven't participated too much in playing a ton of romance. Or if we do, it's always about the yearning and not about the fulfillment mm-hmm. of it, which I actually brought up at a panel at Gen Con. I asked if we play yearning because we don't know how to make satisfied love feel dramatic or important. And watching the faces was so good. I got to ask Edward Spence if he ever yearned for Doom. but those tend to be
we also
ongoing.
Love Edward Spence on this podcast, so
completely. Excited to either be playing for Edward or have Edward playing on Thyat next year.
Which will be great.
He is an absolute darling. Those were my directions kind of I aimed for at the beginning. I'm a lot more let the players run now. I will tweak what I need to tweak to hit the tone I want. But like our current season, the No Gods, ballet of horrible dark violence would be like the best way to describe it. I think it's beautiful, but I think it is a celebration of like some of the worst natures of creatures. And that's not fully where I saw it going, but I knew there was potential. I just didn't realize they would all feel so at home in that place, which is something they brought up multiple times while we were recording. Like Tatiana was the voice of reason and peace. Like in that party, like the one trying to be a moral guiding point. And so that should tell you plenty. If you know Tatiana, which I know you do, congratulations on the New Jersey Web Fest, by the way, actually yesterday.
Oh, thank you very much.
so I'm getting a little more hands off. It's like mm-hmm. I'll set up a world and then just see what parts of it they love. And I'm now a little more confident in my storytelling where that doesn't have to change what I have planned. It can enhance what I have planned. Where before it's like, oh man, this isn't the story I wanted to tell. And now I just realize that stories are what I want to tell. So much more comfortable and talking much less in the podcast. The episode that comes out tomorrow, I probably speak the least I have in any Thyad episode. And I like that. I like it getting less and less of rah-rah as much as possible.
I feel like I saw a post from you, was it just today, that was like, I feel less like a GM and more like a narrator. Mm-hmm. And that's so interesting because I just had an interview with somebody the other day who's like kind of the complete opposite. They're like, well, I use the games And like, I play the game how the game wants to be played. And that is how I pitch it to my players, which is like a totally okay way to be a GM.
And could but be I such feel a like you're time.
The, yeah. But I feel like you're the exact opposite of that, where it's like, we're going to play a game, but if the game doesn't suit us, then the game doesn't really matter anymore.
And I'll make, or I'll make a system if, if everything feels too complicated. Like Pleasure in West River was basically the basic moves from a Powered by the Apocalypse type of system, but just the basic moves, because they were all pretty much normal people. The Fallen Gods is those same basic moves, but I built them custom playbooks for what type of god they wanted to be. So nothing matched it, so I just made it. But I could run most things on lasers and feelings, to be fair. Feral's the opposite. Feral is like a mechanic genius. Like, you give them a playbook, they will use it to tell a narrative parable somehow at some point, in a way that I don't usually look at my moves that way. I don't even think about what my characters look like most of the time, because I just worry about what they're thinking or what they're obsessed with. They'll be, what do you look like? I'm like, oh, they're brown.
Yeah. Does that matter? I think what they think matters more.
It could be my autism too, though, because it can be hard when artists are trying to like have me have my input on something. Like, I think it looks fine.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't do that.
Yeah. So we've been talking about Thyad for a bit, but to preface this to our listeners, in case they don't know, which they should, because we have had some promos for you guys in our episodes, but Thyad is a multi-award-winning podcast that I have heard Ra-Ra refer to as a sad sack podcast. But the description actually, like, on the show is an actual play that focuses on loss, healing, mourning, and joy. But how did this kind of start? I mean, I know you said you tricked Feral into it, but when were you like, oh, what if I made my own, you know, online show?
We had been watching like Critical Role and Dimension 20. We were just those types of people. We played at home and we watched the biggest things that came on once a week. Had a great time. and then The Calamity came out, EXU, and it really expanded my vision of what I saw, like what a game could be. And the next game I ran at home was the best one I had ever ran. It was like a 12 arc thing, and our arcs were like 4 hours each at the time because we were playing in person. So it was a long story, and I felt like I was stepping into a new like understanding of how this could work. I go and do all these one shots, and most of them are funny. Most of them are quite funny. They're very silly. I'm fine with jokes. I'm fairly clever. So it's not really a hard thing for me to play, but it's not really overly engaging most of the time. I laugh a ton just looking at my dog. Like, I laugh very easily. At one point in my life, I actually chose to, this will make me sound wild, I made the active decision to unjade my humor. And I was like, I want to get to the point where I can watch like the Three Stooges and crack up like somebody would have back then, or Charlie Chaplin and crack up. But I'm just used to all these noises and the jokes and the punchlines. I'm not there yet, but I'm much closer. I laugh very easily at things. So funny games are fun. Like, I enjoy them, but nobody really did what I was really feeling I'd be the best at or better at. I did an Old God series. That was my first series I got to be on, where I met Juicy Garland and some wonderful people. And it was a longer, like 10 episode live stream. So, you know, like 30 hours, something like that. And I got to have a few beautiful moments that weren't just like fighting or mystery, but like were sincere. And I could tell the cast like responded in a like, hey, that was kind of unique type of way. And it like wet my mouth for it in a way that I didn't understand yet. Then the first episode of Worlds Beyond Number came out. And I once tried to start an audio drama live team, like on stage, where we all made the sound effects and things like that. Because of storytelling and audio people, they kind of like link up sometimes. And I had talked to Feral about how cool would it be to start like a sad one where you could do sound effects, but I don't know how to do sound design. That stuff takes years to learn. Like, I just wish I would have worked on it when I like thought of it when I was younger. And then the first episode came out and I listened to it. And I was like, Feral, they're doing what I want to do. And like, they're already so much better than I am at any of this. Like, but I think I want to do something. Do you want to record like just like a weird, like sad little D&D session this weekend? Like just like a half hour, just so I can mess with some sound design. We recorded it. They took a bath. They came out. I'm like, I started a Spotify. What do you think about the name? The Heart is a Dungeon. And that was it. Like, and all of a sudden, like nobody was listening the first season really at all. But then by the end, a couple people did. Like Grant was one of the first shows mm-hmm. that like started hyping us up. And we realized, oh, some people kind of like this. Maybe we should be a little more intentional. So we ended that season kind of early because we didn't really have a plan for it. We were just playing and started the fairies like much more intentionally. But when we started it, we'd been around like 8 months or something. Like, it's been a wild ride, and like, it's weird to become slightly prominent in such a short amount of time because you're learning in a spotlight a little bit. You're like, well, 1,000 people will hear this mistake. It used to be like 10. So it's just a weird feeling, still not understanding a lot of the sound engineering side. My sound creative, I feel very at home with. My engineering side, I'm constantly like double guessing and wondering if I'm doing it right or what did I do wrong? Why does the vocal sound like that? I have no idea. Where like you all have great sound. And like the 5GMs, I listen to their vocals and I'm like, how is it so clean? And I just flip out.
To be quite honest, I can only assume it's mics because that is what I have learned, is like, if you can't get the sound quality in your space, you're not going to get it like on the editing side of it.
Yeah.
So I do think it's like, what are you going to invest in mics and stuff like that? Which I do want to talk about later because of Lone Heart. So I do want to talk about that later, mm-hmm. but I want to continue down our trek of Thyad for the moment. You mentioned that in you had like 16 episodes and you played 3 different games, which I don't feel like that is something many shows do, is switch games in the middle of a show.
I've gathered that. Yeah.
Cause I don't even know. I don't do it. And I don't know if I functionally, because I think I play games more of to the game rather than like to the story sometimes. So like how is it juggling different systems while telling one story?
That one was easy because of the arcs. None of the series that have come out since then, I've done that to get it. But it was easy because there was an arc where Feral was a kid with their cousin on bikes for 3 episodes. And I'm like, well, their kid's on bikes. Like, I don't think we need to make D&D characters for this. And then there was another one where they went back in time into the Appalachians. And I had played Old Gods of Appalachia. So I was like, well, I mean, this kind of just makes sense. So it was D&D on the end cap and the beginning, but then the episodes like 2, 3, and 4 were like a almost lasers and feelings type game that was just called like Rabbit of Sun, Rabbit of Stars, and they had like 3 moves. Next year, we'll be running Babylon for most of the year, which is sponsored completely by Evil Hat. But that will have many systems in it, with Thirsty Sword Lesbians being the main one. But a bunch of shorter games I made come into that. 10 Candles or Reduced to 5 Candles is coming into that. Lasers and Feelings, Cracker Barrel Has Fallen. So there'll be like 12 systems probably in that one when it's done, with Thirsty Sword being the continuous thread. But because of the way I like to tell big worlds, it's like, well, here's your main cast, and over here elsewhere is this random happening. So it's a lot easier to plug in some guests to a one pager than have them all making playbooks when I know we're going to record an hour episode. Like, they'll be lucky if they get 2 or 3 roles each. So I just found it to be easy, and then found later on that it just worked out.
I think you're right in the sense that I wonder if, and maybe I'm selling myself short, but I wonder if that takes like both the mind of a podcast host and a game designer to like see that as, I can strip this down, I can take this out, and it will make it work better for the story that I'm telling.
I think it also comes from all the one shots I was doing. Because it's like, oh, good, I have to look at this 300-page book for a week, and I'll be lucky to roll once. And I found it was just killing so much of my time that I didn't want to have to do that for my own show also, where I'm studying to learn something just for like a little arc episode. Half of it could have been laziness, to be honest. And I just got real tired of putting all these games in my head and never using them. Yeah. And then wishing I could always come back. Like, Songs of the Dusk haunts me. That game seemed so pretty, and I got to be a little chinchilla dude. It's like Blades of the Dark, but pastel painted. Like, it's hopeful. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, if Blades of the Dark meets Wander Home, kind of. And I got to only play it for a one-shot. And there's so many downtime mechanics and things that we never got to touch. And so there's lots of games out there just breaking my heart until I have time to get to them. Like, Our Brilliant Ruin, that game haunts me. I have quite an idea for that I don't know what I'm going to get to.
Yeah.
But I really want to. I got to play it with the 5 GMs, and I just loved some of the mechanics, but mostly the setting. I loved the setting. I love that the common folk always have one skill they always succeed in. Mm-hmm. I think that is such a smart mechanic. And then the wealthy folk have more portfolios of wealth that they can use to influence things. The common folks don't have that, but they're always good at one thing. And I thought that was just so smart. I'm obsessed with that mechanic to this day.
Also, like, you play multiple games in a season, and we'll see that, I suppose, with Babylon when it comes out. But you also have a fairly significant amount of cast members in shows that you make. How do you think that, because I think, again, most of the times in the majority of actual plays, even if a podcast is doing like short shows, those shows have one cast, and that is kind of the cast, and maybe they'll have a guest, but that's the cast. I feel like for you guys have a large pool of people you pull from in every show that you make. So while you might have like 2 or 3 main cast members, you then have like even a bigger a group of guest stars almost. How do you think that has kind of like impacted how you tell stories and why that could make Thyad different from other actual plays?
Let's go back to when I was 8. my mom, long story short, we were kind of poor. My mom worked at a thrift store instead of teaching, so we get a discount at the private Christian school they wanted us all to go to that was connected to the thrift store. So if I went and helped her, because she worked in the toy section, for every few bags I made, I got to pick one, because we couldn't afford to buy them, but this was an easy way to get them. I was obsessed with little figurines, like Lego guys, plastic ninjas, cowboys, like anything that was a dude or dudette. I was very into. I didn't really care for Lego castles or anything like that. There was this little patch of grass in our yard where I would have like 2-3 week long dramas with, like, because I had like 500 of these little dudes. I was like, over here's where the bad guys are, here's where the good guys are, here's the other good guys that are kind of against the other good guys, here's the neutral zone where all the romance happens. And I would play out these massive games yelling at anyone who tried to come near, like, you don't know how to play right. And then when it get to the end, final scene, I'd clean up. I would never finish the whole thing because, I don't know, I'm still kind of that way, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I've always liked more moving parts. There is a sacrifice to the story where you don't get the close-up view of one part changing as much as you get lots of parts moving. Like Pleasure in West River was a really fun collage building series that way, where each one stacked on the other and they got to come in like breadcrumbs. Exhausting to GM. I had a big poster board that had time zones of where everyone was during the day so they wouldn't accidentally cross over each other, so they wouldn't actually start talking to someone's PC who's not there. Very frustrating. A wonderful final product, in my opinion.
Yes.
But there is a cost with it. Like, The Fallen Gods has been really nice to hang out with them for 6 episodes and to just not be interrupted with somebody joining. And then there's the, who are you? What are you doing here? And that takes up half the episode. I have, even the fairies, we had 28 people in that one. Babylon's going to have more because I've kind of told our Discord, if you want in, you can be in.
Yeah.
It just could be for a one shot. And But I think it's also what Thyad kind of is. Like, I think the community of it is kind of laced close with the podcast in a way that not all shows are. I've seen your show. You guys do movie watchings and stuff. And like, yeah. I love that. And I wish I should just delegate that to someone, actually. I'm just going to, Kelly, if you're listening. But it's just, I've had people be like, with the cred you're getting, you could probably get big names. Like, if you sent out invites, you probably would. I'm like, but what if like 50 people play very emotionally charged games over and over and over? Like, what would happen then if I didn't just like use it as kind of a ladder, like, and we just kept this in community? What would it turn into? Like, that could be very cool. And I'm curious. So like Rick Perry's joining us for a series. I already recorded him. That comes out next year also. And there's a couple other folks I've been in conversation with, but I am so much more comfortable with like Tatiana at a table. Mm-hmm. Like, Tat's become one of my safety players, but I have quite a few at this point where there's just an energy that is me being aware of what they're good at and them being aware of what I'm good at. And where both of us also kind of falter. And sometimes no matter how big of a name or how heavily skilled they are, that can't replace chemistry. Mm-hmm. And I just like telling stories a lot. And I'm a lot more nervous when people take themselves very seriously. And I'm supposed to reach out in a much more professional manner than just like, hey, what up? And sending them a GIF on Discord. I just like the comfort of playing with the people I know a lot also. But I also feel indebted to them. Like, I wish I could just be a dick and be like, nope, 4 people for the next 2 years. Hope you all enjoy my Discord.
And you're like, instead, here's 42 different characters in a single AP.
The mists roll across the valley over the bodies of hundreds of dead as a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal. Enter Pocket Bard. Immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so, so, so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG-loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys.
Kamari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes, this bar's next.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
To death metal Viking cats.
Hello Kitty, you see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl in a special Gertrude role. Happy birthday, happy birthday. I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's Snake Eyes minus two. That's a zero.
Snake Eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones.
And get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck.
Pros and cons, too. We get a bunch of love. Like, it's one of the reasons I try to support so many shows is because Thyad gets a ton of support, and it makes me feel weird sometimes. Like, PAX was weird last year. People knew who I was, who I did not know, and it was weird. Kenzie, it was awkward. I signed an autograph in an elevator of my hotel.
Oh, okay.
Even at the con.
That's like, a level I wasn't into. I was like, people are coming. I'm saying, hey, I like your show. No, signing an autograph in a hotel is crazy. Yeah.
I signed two. One at the con, one in my hotel. I had never met either of them before. And Farrell wasn't with me, so I'm texted
so
like it's kind of weird here. Why'd you pick me such a flashy outfit? Next year, it's all black.
Are you going to PAX U at the end of this year? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like it so much more than Gen Con, Kenzie. It's so much better than Gen Con.
I'm going.
Mate, weren't you supposed to go last year?
We were trying to go last year, but it didn't work out scheduling wise. And then so we were like, okay, then we'll go to Gen Con this year. And then we were like, no, let's just wait for PAX at the end of the year. Yeah.
I wasn't going to do Gen Con. And then we realized I had flight credits that were about to expire. So the flight would have been free or we would have just lost it. So it was fun. I went for 3 nights, so it wasn't as rough as my 5 nights last year. and ditched everyone on the last night when they were all going to drink way too much.
Also, I will say, like, PAX U is a lot closer to where I am. So, like, easy train ride in and out if I need to be. Like,
they're all
so
far
nice.
Away.
Yeah, for you, unfortunately.
We're hoping to relocate to the Seattle area in the next year.
Okay.
We've wanted to over a few years. We own our house and got it at a really good rate. And it would be very expensive to even get a smaller place now. So we've been stuck in an area we'd rather not be for a little while. Sure. But we're finally to the point of if it doesn't change, we're just going to go anyway. So hoping PAX West will be a little bit more of a home area con, even though it's a video game base, but that means they should say yes to my panels.
Yes, it means they should say yes.
Yeah, I would rather just do the two PAXes if I had the choice.
I also want to talk more about community too, but before we get into that, I do want to talk about editing, because you mentioned audio engineering versus audio editing and soundscaping and that sort of thing. And I do feel like since coming onto the scene, you've kind of upped the game in a way that has made a lot of other people start to put a lot of focus on sound design, which I think is great. But I suppose what was the impetus for that? Like, I started a podcast and I was like, oh, I would love for it to sound like audio drama-y. But I don't think I really knew what that meant until I started listening to you and Worlds Beyond Numbers, as you said, was kind of what you were trying to do. And those kind of influenced my way of thinking about audio design. But why did you jump in and you were like, this is what's super important for what I'm doing?
Let me take you back. A couple hundred years. there was this missionary that was locked up and writing letters to their religious body from the jail. And this was when instruments were starting to enter into the more modern wave Christianity type of thing, like guitars and stuff like that. In the letter, they wrote, concerned because music has such an easy way to manipulate the soul to where you think it's the spirit. I've always just been fascinated with that. Some of the bands I was in were weird. like straight up acid folk. Like people would ask what we sound like. We're like, oh, a dump truck full of flute. And like my music tastes have always been very eclectic. From if anyone's ever heard The Books, they would be one of the largest band influences on my sound design because they use a lot of clips and beats and things looping. And I've just always dug it. When I was like 13, I made money putting breakbeats behind clips of the pastor of my parents' church's sermons for little 2-minute things. So it would seem like cool. And like all it was me downloading one file and dragging it into GarageBand and like fade in, fade out. That was it. So when I first started, I knew there was going to be some. In my head, it was like, well, music, ambient, sound effects. Those are the three. That's what you need to do. Season one, you can sort of see it growing. Like, oh, now there's two lines of ambient sound. Ooh. There was a point in the fairies where I stumbled into, if I put two different music tracks on top of each other that don't line up, but make them line up enough, it makes a weird vibe, and just started kind of getting weird. My bands were always weird, so I realized I couldn't imitate normal very well. I knew it was going to be niche and started kind of leaning into it a little more during the fairies. And then it just kind of kept growing. I've acknowledged I'm a better sound designer, I think, than GM at this point. But it's a surprise I didn't know was there. And I really love it. The hours can be very isolating. And yeah. You can't watch or read or do anything when you're doing a lot of sound design. Like Farrell draws all day, but like the TV's on or like sure. Listening to podcasts.
You can't do that.
No, you're just in your dark cave, just going wild.
Yeah.
And you walk into the world and it sounds wrong. You're like, that airplane's fading properly. Like, they should probably do something about that. So I don't know why it became such a focus. I think part of me entered in, like, I've ran some, and this maybe is a little transparent. I ran all these great games at my own table at home. I was like, I'm a pretty good GM. Like, I'm pretty okay at this. I enter the space and start seeing other GMs and how many amazing, talented ones there are. And that's probably why I even started getting away from battle. I was like, there are GMs that run it so much better than I will run it. That why would I try to compete with that vibe? And just kind of leaned into the narrative fairy tale aspects of my strength. And now so even more so into the sound design. I hope there's a year soon where I don't really run much as a GM, but I get to play and other GMs run things for Heart as a Dungeon. Because it just sounds easier. Yeah, I'll just edit it and get to play. I don't have to plan anything. but I just, Farrell's a huge encouragement in all things, but especially the musical things. Like they've, since the first season, she's been, there are things you do with sound design that give me goosebumps sometimes. And like, it just makes something in my brain touch in a way that works with my neurodivergence in a cool way. And just hearing stuff like that a lot, it was like, oh, well, if no one else is listening, at least Farrell likes it. And then some people started listening, but the attention has been surprising. And I don't say that with a lot of fake ego. I say that loving the shit I make and thinking it's profound and beautiful, but also not expecting a lot of attention. I ran a poetry publishing company. My stuff was great. People don't buy poetry. So I was trained very young to not associate my skill with it's welcoming anywhere I was. So the attention and the laurels and all that has been very surprising. People are like, are you okay? You only got two things in the New Jersey Web Fest. I'm like, it's like the biggest one. Yeah. And like, I didn't think anyone would like this shit. Like, I'm doing fine. So the listener count is my favorite laurel of all of them, is just knowing there's some weirdos out there that probably carried some bullshit Pablo Neruda in their back pocket when they were like a hipster or something years ago, and they found a place at home in like a podcast. We are definitely faded hipster coded in a lot of ways. Like if you knew Bright Eyes in the first four albums, you probably like The Heart is a Dungeon.
But I think that is so interesting because, you know, faded hipster coded in the actual play space is something that people don't do. So like this poetry driven, like joy and loss driven, grief driven thing, yearning driven thing isn't what anybody is doing.
which is so surprising, Kenzie.
Yeah.
I thought you all were going to be a bunch of weird alt kids, because every scene I've been in has been weird alt kids. Like poetry, well, like, kink, polyamory, they're all a bunch of faded artists who have like done mescaline in the desert. I get here and people are like, oh no, I've never even drank. Like, and it's just more theater focused and like kind of maybe hermit teenagers.
It's definitely theater focused, like actor focused almost. Mm-hmm. I think also, and since I have been granted a look into by being a part of the Taya Discord, I do feel like you've created this really cool community of folks within the industry, but what it feels like almost is that you're giving people an excuse to separate from this idea of like anything internet being just quote unquote content, which is a word that I hate. Mm-hmm. And you're almost creating the excuse to look at actual play as an art form. Granted, we already probably should have been doing that because we've been creating a whole industry about it. But I feel like Thayat is so different because the conversations surrounding it are talking about like breaking conventions and what can we really do with this form of media or this form of art.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the group that you've kind of like cultivated being Thayat and having them on your show is like making people question what are they bringing to this.
Which I love that there's people having those conversations, because it's not usually how my brain works. Mine's usually like, there was a missionary in a jail 200 years ago. And I more understand things through how the anecdote makes me feel. I'm not that great at analyzing things outside of myself. I'm very self-aware, but you ask me to evaluate somebody else, I'm like, they seem nice. So like people like Kendo or Navarre who talk very thoughtfully and elevatedly about APs, I'm like, really? You really saw all that in that episode? I just thought it sounded good. Like, that's awesome. But I've just also never really been much of a critic of things. I take in things I like. So I've never really been one to critique something too harshly if it's something I enjoy. And if I don't enjoy it, I don't listen. The commentator aspect is a little vulnerable feeling every once in a while. Like, I was never so nervous as when Rascal posted the interview with Farrell and I last year. And I'm like, what if at the end it's like we hated them and they're bad?
It was a pretty medium level interview. Like, it was just...
It was mostly about mutual aid.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
But Rowan has become a dear friend. When I saw them at PAX last year, it was a few days in, and there's just the biggest hug and the whisper of, there's the affinity. And like, and I didn't know them at all at the point of that interview. I was so nervous, and she was so nice. And it's just been such a wild, like, 16, 17 months.
I'm sure.
Where most of it's just, I'm sure you understand, like, laurels and things happen, awards happen. You're mostly in a dark little room.
I'm like, mostly sitting exactly where I am.
Yeah.
Usually this window is closed, headphones all the way on.
Like, don't you love telling stories? Like, well, I mostly edit stories.
Yeah, yeah.
We tell one for 2 hours. That's like possibly over 40 hours of editing work for two episodes.
Correct.
So, yeah, I'm a storyteller. I'm more of a story, like, collage artist is how I usually describe myself.
That's good.
I met Sai at Gen Con, who wrote all the custom music for Blackwater from the UK. They just showed up at the panel I was running, asked a question in a British accent. I had no idea who they were till after. But just a lot of respect for the beautiful, beautiful work that dude does. And in talking to him, I'm like, I see myself as a collage artist. Like, you're a musician. I see myself as a cut and snipper, because I don't write any of this. Like, if the song's moving, I didn't write it. I just put it at the right point. So I try to kind of keep that distance of people assuming I'm maybe a musician.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in bands, but I was the bass player that could keep up. I wasn't like the star of the band.
I'm downloading just the royalty-free tracks that speak to me. Mm-hmm. That's what's going in there.
So many of them.
Yeah. Well, on this note of community, the Lone Heart Award, you just mentioned that like you've been around for 16-17 months and you've already created a community-based award. So the Lone Heart Award focuses on story concept and that's it, and then their award for that is like tech equipment for a new podcast.
If I may correct you,
please correct
there will actually be a different theme each time. The first year was concept. This one we just recently finished up was sound design.
Okay.
The first one I did alone.
But each one is like, it's based off of one part of an actual play. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. As one who thinks their sound design would rate much higher than their sound engineering, I wanted to have some variation because it's also for shows under 2 years old. Next year, it could become under 1 year because we had some shows entering that were also entering into WebFests and we're like, this isn't really what we made this for. Sure, your show's been under 2 years, but all of you have been making shows for like 10 years. So next year we might change that a little because we just wanted to help babies. We wanted to help the brand new shows. It was inspired by Gen Con last year because I know the Crit Awards last year. We had no idea what the Crit Awards were. One person voted for us. And then after that, I told everyone else not to because I'm like, no, we already got one. Because I just didn't know what they were. So that was funny. But I saw a lot of people in my Discord sad. And A, in my head, I'm like, huh, it's like you haven't gotten hundreds of poetry rejection letters your whole life. And then in talking to Farrell, we already had had budget we applied to like local mutual aid when we were running it. And it wasn't a lot. Like people donated diapers and food and things like that. I was like, what if we did that in the space? Like, it could be seen as the exact same thing. Maybe just do one a year. Like, it's not a huge cost if it's one a year. Maybe after we do it a year, people will want to contribute. We also did the We Fucking Believe in You grant, which we did once to the Tabletop Tailspin Network, where we paid for three of their WebFest entries. We may be doing that again or something, because someone approached me at Gen Con offering to match an award. And I was like, we actually just got finished, so we could actually maybe do an extra one if you were interested in that. So that was just a random cool thing that happened. But it was more just people were sad. And I was like, well, who encourages them until they get to the point of winning Crit Awards? Like, what's the, who bridges that gap besides just fighting up the ladder with their friends and no one else cheering them on type of deal? So we did that one, and Blades of Mayari got the first one because their concept was just out of the world. Like, it wasn't a hard choice. It will be the easiest way to put it. This last year was more difficult, but I had like six sound designers who volunteered to help. So they went through all the first wave, and then I listened after based on all their notes and things like that. So it made it much, much easier on me. The first year I listened to like 18 episodes, I think, for it. At the beginning, I'm always like, I'll do it first, and if people like it, they'll help next time.
And I feel like you've, again, the cultivating community, which you seem to have a very large background in, I think helps that too. Like, mm-hmm. people, when you present something that people do want to be a part of, then they're definitely more willing to help you out on that other end of it.
And like, this will sound weird, Kenzie. My ideas are pretty cool. I'll say it dead ass. But I've been in like art communities where my ideas were very, like, every once in a while I had one that would stand out, but everyone had amazing, unique, interesting ideas. Like, it was kind of just the ground I grew from a little with art friends. So I've been a little surprised at how much attention some of my ideas have gotten. I'm like, well, that seemed like a pretty basic one. I mean, a bunch of people saw a thing. Come on. Haven't you ever seen Magnolia? but it's also the movies I like. I love movies of large revolving casts that all share like an event happening. So it didn't seem like a weird idea to me. So sometimes I just feel like I accidentally step into like people thinking I'm cooler than I am. Cause I'm like, oh no, this, I've just been waiting to do this one. Like, I wrote about it when I was 17. It was like a love story. I have it in my journal still. but it's also really nice seeing people love it. Being a little older than some, my plan is to more fade into sound design and let more younger GMs take the thyad, like podium and things of that. Being raised in Pentecostal circles, my parents always like mentored people. They always had like a younger married couple that they would meet with and talk about like marital issues with. And sometimes it would last for years to picking them up from hospitals and like all the real stuff. Like, oh, falling off the wagon, you can come live on our couch. Like, I kind of grew up with that just around us. So in my opinion, you should always sort of be reproducing yourself a little bit if you like what you do. So I really hope to fade out, and maybe down the line, there's just one game I'm running slowly in the background while the big shows of the year are people like Ian supposed to come and GM, talk to Kendo also about doing it. And then some people who never really have much, who I would really, really love. I was trying to get Tot to. I've been working on Tot, drilling them GM style.
Maybe once they're done with their schooling completely.
I have that in my calendar too.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I'm going to reach out. Don't worry.
If you're a sound designer, get someone started doing sound designing. If you've got an extra mic, it doesn't have to be brand new. Like, make some silly raffle on your Facebook. Yeah, Facebook. And give it away. I don't know. It's easier when you have the tools. Even like a better mic can save so many hours in editing. And you might not know that if you've never had one better than like $20, $30. You might not know how many hours that could save you.
Yeah, I started out with like a $30-something mic. And then I moved up to like an $80 mic. And then I moved up to the one I have now, which I'm not going to pretend is cheap. It's not. But it was something, since I knew I was going to be doing this, I said I have to invest in, because I'm the one editing. So if my sound is bad, that's actually a problem for me.
Hours of an episode saved. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just felt like a cool thing to do. We just didn't see anyone doing it. And we saw mutual aid posts everywhere. And we're like, well, this isn't the way a community should maintain itself.
Yeah.
But there's also no one right answer at the same time, because it's so diverse and broad. We just hoped other people would start doing it. So right after, like, the TTRPG grant people did their thing, which I didn't know they existed. And it made me so happy. Like, oh, there's somebody who's doing it for real. That's cool. Yeah. And then I booked their charity games for 6 months after I met them at PAX, then told them, have somebody else do this. Now I have too many players I juggle. But I just love that energy. So I hope another podcast or a stream channel is like, hey, we're going to stream and raise money, and whatever we raise, we're going to give it away to this type of cause in the space.
Yeah.
You could easily have a stream channel where you stream 1 week, give it away the next week, stream 1 week, even if you get $50.
Like, you really could.
It's low-hanging fruit, people. Whoever's listening, I'm going to want to get Grant if he'll just get away from Castaway.
Oh, man. Pulling him away from the beach.
There's so many more Castaway series planning out already. Like, they'll probably be in space at some point. When I first met Grant after the Crit Awards last year, he's like, I was a little offended that I got nominated for game, like, podcast host. Like, I'm a GM, and now he's fully adopted how good he is at being a host. It's a skill. It's definitely a skill set. And Grant from Game Master Monday is amazing at it. And also very good at juggling players.
Yes. He's had some of the biggest, weeks. Crazy.
Like, that's a lot of players he goes through.
Well, we are coming to the end here. So I want to, number one, thank you again for giving us your time. But I have a last question for you. And it may be the hardest one of the day. Can you tell me one of your favorite moments from a table? It can be anything, like, fun, sad, just something you look back on fondly.
This will be from an in-person table.
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Ran a big campaign, an island type of thing, a pearl the size of the moon, like, was on top of this island. It was called Pearl Helm, etc., etc. Like, a year and a half later, we're running a different campaign, the one after I saw EXU. We were at, like, episode, we weren't recording it. Session 9 of 12, something like that. When all of them realized they were playing in the same world, but like 500 years before, and they were the ones about to do the thing they had already played in the future. Oh,
that's really good.
Like, and I was a pretty new GM, and when they screamed, like, I have never forgotten what that felt like. And in Dyad, I get a lot of cool chances to see stuff like that because of all the breadcrumbs that are moving through Pleasure and West River and other stories. But that moment was like, okay, maybe I could do this. Maybe I'd be okay at this. Yeah. and I'll never forget the scream of around the table, like when I brought out like a battle map and they recognized the terrain.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, it was a precious moment.
Yeah. Well, everybody who is listening, please go check out Rara on This Heart is a Dungeon. And they've got a ton of different types of shows. So, you know, if you're into certain things, I'm sure you'll find it over there. And you can also see Rara on CrewPG on our Candela Obscura, The Circle of the Broken Cage.
The Void. I'm so glad I got what I wanted at the end of that series.
Sometimes you got to give it to your players, you know? Sometimes that's the only thing that makes sense.
I'm stuck between a story and a hard place. Thanks for having me back in the studio, Kenzie. It's been so long.
Yeah, thank you for coming on and chatting. I'm so glad to have gotten all your thoughts about everything you've been working on in the past year and a half, year or two. But for everybody else who's listening, until next time.